Colorado. So, well, hey, I know you've been welcomed several times, but I am glad that you are here at Harvest today. I say this a lot, but it's a lot more fun when you're here. I mean, it's just a lot better when you're here. And so thank you for getting out of bed and getting ready and coming this morning. Thank you for brushing your teeth. Did you brush your teeth this morning? Huh? Yeah? Clapped about that. Yeah, no, you didn't care about my owie, but you clapped for teeth brushing. Well, guys, we're in week three of a series called Love Your City, and I'm just curious this morning, does anybody here love your city? Yeah? That was okay. You want to try that again? You're waking up still. I know. Is there anyone here that loves your city this morning? There we go. And so we're in a series called Love Your City, and this is a study through the book of Nehemiah. Now, I just want to remind you that our theme verse for this year is 1 John 3:18, and in fact, let's say this together, because I know you get tired of just hearing me say it, and so it's on the screen for you, and so let's say it together on the count of three. 1, 2, 3. My dear children, let's not just talk about love, let's practice real love. And so that's our theme verse for this year. And so when I ask the question, is there anybody here that loves your city? We now have some new definition for what that means, because we've been taking this whole year and we've been talking about how that love is not just words. You know, it's easy to say, I love you. Am I right? Like, just say it to me. Just say, I love you. Thank you. That's so sweet. It's easy to say the words, I love you, but living it out, practicing real love is a very different thing than just saying the words, I love you. And so this year, we've been working this out. I should say, the Spirit of God has been working this out within us. He's been helping us to figure out what it really means to love one another, to love our families, to love God, and now He's helping us with loving our city. And so when we ask this question, is there anyone that loves your city? It's a very different response than just, well, yeah, I say that with my words. And so we have tried really hard as a family, as Harvest family, to put into action the things of God that He's been stirring in us for our city. Now, let me catch you up in case you've missed the first 2 weeks of this. I want to bring you up to speed in the book of Nehemiah. Today, we're going to be in chapter 3. And so in chapter 1, we meet the man named Nehemiah, and he's the writer of the book. It's almost like reading his journal, like he's telling us his story, he's writing it out. And so the book is Nehemiah. It's about a man named Nehemiah, and Nehemiah had a really cool job. Nehemiah was the cupbearer to the king, and what this meant was that he got to taste the food and the drink that had been prepared for the king, so that just in case someone got the bright idea to poison the king, then they would find out, because the cupbearer would keel over dead. And if that happened, then the king was safe and the cupbearer was dead, right? But better him than the king, right? And so he had this cool job. I mean, he lived in the palace. He ate the best food. He had the best wine. He had audience with the king on a regular basis. He was cupbearer to the king. But even though he's living in the palace, he's living the high life, so to speak, God begins in chapter 1 to break his heart for his home city of Jerusalem. And here's what happens, is he hears the news that something has happened in his city. And when he asks, this is what he finds out. The news is this: the people have been exiled, so they've now been spread out, they've been sent away, they've been run off from their city. The walls of this city have been destroyed, they've been torn down, and the gates have been burned with fire. And we talked a little bit about this, because if I told you this morning, you know, well, the wall around my house fell down, you know, it just wouldn't be that big of a deal. Culturally, it's not that big of a deal for us, but this was a really big deal, is that the cities would put these big walls up around their town, and it meant that they were strong and they were safe and they were secure. And so the fact that the walls have been torn down, the gates have been burned with fire, the people have been run off, it's really a picture of desolation. It's really a picture, you know, it's not just about the walls, it's about a people. And so Nehemiah, he hears this news and God breaks his heart. And so he spends 4 months praying about this, asking God, what can I do about it? What should my role be in this? And then we saw in chapter 2 that when he finally got the opportunity to stand before the king, and King Artaxerxes said, I can tell something's wrong. I see on your face. I can tell you're down. Tell me what's going on. And Nehemiah so tactfully presented to the king the need for his city. And we talked last week about the need to exercise tact. You know, even when we have the truth, that doesn't give us a license to be a jerk, right? And so Nehemiah had the truth from the King of Kings, but he still had to stand before the king of the land and tactfully present his request. And so he asked the king, he says, I'd like for some time off to go and repair the city, but also I'd like for you to make sure that I can get there safely, and I'd also like for you to provide all the wood for this. I mean, can you see this request? Do your kids ever do this to you, right? It's like, Dad, can I have a few dollars to get some pizza, right? And you're like, okay. Oh, and can I also spend the night at my friend's house? Okay. And can I also take your car? No. Like, right? This is Nehemiah's just like, he's like, can I have, and can't, and, but he's so good at it, and God gives him favor. And so at the end of chapter 2, the people begin to rally around Nehemiah, and they all go and they begin to build the wall. Now, I got to thinking about this week. How big of a job was this? You know, how big of a wall was this? And so I did a little bit of research, and the wall was about 2.5 miles long, okay? So just about 2.5 miles of length of wall. But here's what made it so massive is it averaged 40 feet in height and 8 feet in thickness, okay? That's a lot of wall, am I right? I mean, that's a lot of bricks. It's a lot of cement. That's a lot of wall. And it reminded me when I was a kid, my brother and I, I made a deal with my dad, and then I talked my brother into joining into this deal, okay? And so we had just built a new house, but we didn't have a wall around our house. And so I wanted a basketball court. Dad wanted a wall. And so Dad said, Jason, Gerald, if you will dig the footings for the wall around our perimeter of our property, then I will build you a basketball court. And so I went to Gerald, and I'm like, Gerald, this is the coolest thing. I mean, Dad is going to build us a basketball court. And he's like, I don't play basketball. I'm like, but you're going to love this, Gerald. If we will dig the footings, he is going to put a basketball court in. He's like, I don't like basketball. Gerald, we need to do this together. It'll be bonding, you know? I mean, we're bro time. Like, we're going to have a great time. And I convinced him, I don't know how, we started digging the footing for this wall. And I was reminded of this story when I was thinking about Nehemiah, because we started and we were teenagers, and one of us wasn't very strong, and it was hot, you know, and the ground, you can figure out which one, you know, and the ground was hard, and it was summertime. And I just remember, like, we dug like literally like 2 inches down, okay? And we were just like spent. I mean, we're like, we had 2 inches around our whole property. We're like, Dad, the footing's done, you know? He's like, you ain't getting a basketball court for that. And so we had this thing this is what we would do, is I'd wake up in the morning and I'd get the water hose and I would go and I would water our trench, our 2-inch trench, right? Hoping that it would soften the dirt. And then we'd dig a little bit more, and then the next day we'd water it, we'd fill it up with water, and we'd dig a little more. We were weak, all right? It was just like, don't laugh at me, okay? And so we finally did, but I just remember every morning waking up thinking, oh my goodness, I have to go and I have to dig. It's so big, right? I mean, I felt like miles. Like, I might as well have been digging to China, okay? Have you ever felt that way? The enormity, okay, the enormity of the task at hand. And here's where I'm hoping that you will relate, okay? Maybe you're like, I've never dug a footing. I'm not into wall building, you know. That's not even what we're talking about, okay? That's where we're starting at. But here's where you might relate, is the thing that God has called you to repair is big. It's daunting. It's expensive. It's going to be difficult. You're not sure if you're up to the task. Maybe that's how you feel this morning. You know, we've been talking about loving our city, right? We've been talking about loving our city. And I just have to warn you that if you put something on Facebook, it's fair game because you put it out to the whole world. But one of our members, she posted on Facebook this week. I could tell that she was facing the enormity of the task that she had been called to, because here's what she put on her Facebook. She said, "Have you ever had that kind of day where you come home and rewatch the episode of Grey's where McDreamy dies just because you need a good cry?" And I said, "No, I have never done that, but I'll keep reading." She said, "Yep, working with teens will do that. My heart breaks for the lack of hope that these kids have." You see, you've probably felt this at some point. You felt the enormity of the task. You know what? The city is big. The problems are huge. You know, I don't know how we're going to do this. And while this series is primarily about loving our city, I really felt led this morning to challenge you in this way, because repairing the city is one thing, but this could also apply to any number of areas of your personal life. You see, some of you are here this morning, and the enormous task at hand is repairing your marriage. Your marriage has been broken. Trust has been broken. Something has happened, and that's the thing. You can't even focus on repairing the city of Albuquerque or Taylor Ranch or someone else, because you are so broken. Your marriage is so in distress that is the thing, that's the giant that you're waking up to every single morning, is you're looking at your marriage going, "I just don't know if this can ever be fixed. I just don't know if we can really get past all of this baggage that we've brought into this, and I don't know if we can do that." Maybe today you're working on your relationship with your children. Maybe something's happened with one of your children, and that relationship has been damaged, and maybe that's the thing that weighs on you. Maybe that's the thing that you think about when you're laying in bed at night and you're trying to go to sleep, or when you wake up in the morning, or maybe when you see something that they post on social media. Your heart is broken for your child, and that's the enormous task that stands before you today. Maybe you're here today and you're trying to repair your finances. Maybe you've declared bankruptcy, or maybe you've had some challenges. Maybe you're just living paycheck to paycheck and you're just trying to figure out, "Well, I'm never going to get out of this cycle." And that is the enormous thing that is standing before you today. Maybe you're repairing trust, or maybe you're repairing hope, or maybe you're repairing communication. Well, here's what I'm asking you. Have you ever stood before that big thing, that big wall, that big task, that enormous thing that is just so heavy in your heart? Because I'm here to tell you that these are big tasks. They're overwhelming tasks, but I believe that if Nehemiah were here today, that he would stand, he would shake his head in agreement, and he'd say, "Yeah, I know how you feel. I had a really big job too. I remember, you know, I can just imagine Nehemiah going, you know, I remember what it was like the first time that I went to Jerusalem and I saw just how bad it was," right? Have you ever had this happen where, you know, you get a report on something and you're just hoping that it's not as bad as how they say that it is? Have you ever had that happen? I was a contractor in Dallas, in the Dallas area, for a number of years, and we were in the middle of framing up an office complex, and we had had a really good week. We had got a bunch of walls up. It was starting to come together. It was looking good, and then we were in our home. We were in a small group, and we were having a small group, and all of a sudden, it began to storm, and the power went out, and the rain was coming down, and it was pretty bad, and the tornado sirens began to go off. And then a friend of mine who enjoys joking with me sent me a text message and said, "Hey, I was driving down Brown Street and your building is flat as a pancake." And I was like, "That guy, he is just such a joker, you know." And we're just like having a small group. We're like, you know, lighting candles at this point because we don't have power. And we're just like, we're just going to keep going with the small group. And he texts me again. He's like, "Dude, I'm sorry." And I'm like, "Ha-ha, LOL, you know, you're funny, right?" And then we finish. I'm like, "Babe, I should probably go and check, just see what's going on." And I drive over there, and guess what? It's flat as a pancake. And I'm like, that is not LOL, right? Like, that is bad. In fact, it was worse than I expected, okay? I mean, I thought maybe a few pieces of wood had fallen down, right? I mean, it was gone, okay? Have you ever had that happen? Okay? The task is big, right? And Nehemiah would stand here and say, yeah, I understand. And we come to chapter 3, and I think we get some insightful truth about how to tackle this big task of loving our city. Now, I'm just curious, because most of you failed this question last week. How many of you have read chapter 3 of Nehemiah now? Yeah, you did so much better this week. I'm so proud of half of you. So here's the deal. Chapter 3, okay, if you've read it, okay, it's not nearly as exciting as the first two chapters, okay? This is kind of, like, this is the part of the story where it kind of slows down. People get bogged down because chapter 3 is a long list of names, very complicated names, right? Like, I don't know why people in the Bible couldn't name their kids Joe and Mary and Sally. I don't know why they picked names like Melchizedek. Like, didn't Mark say that name really cool? I'm not going to even try to say it the way Mark said it. I mean, they picked these crazy names. And so chapter 3 is this long list of names of people and families who helped to rebuild the wall. And so, in fact, a lot of people would come to chapter 3 and they just go, yeah, right? They just, like, let's just skip over that chapter, thinking, well, there's nothing there for us to learn about loving our city, but you would be wrong. And so let's start with one verse in chapter 3. I'm going to start kind of in the middle of it with one verse. I want to pull out this one big truth, and then we're going to go back through the chapter, and we're going to flesh this out, okay? Nehemiah 3, verse 28. This is what it says. Above the horse gate, the priests made repairs, each in front of his own house. Okay, I want you to catch the last part of this verse especially. They made repairs, each in front of his own house. So here is the plan that God gives to Nehemiah that I believe will still work today. Each person, each family simply loves the part of the city that is nearest to them. Here's the plan. Every person, right where you live, just work on the wall, just literally walk out of your house, walk out of the door, and go to the very closest section of wall. Go across the street, or go just the next section of wall. Just go there and just start repairing the wall. You see, if you'll read through chapter 3, you'll notice these words over and over. You'll see next to them, or next to him. You'll see a family name, and they say, this family repaired the section next to him. This family repaired the section next to them. You'll see you see that over and over. And so here was the strategy, okay? It's a big wall. There's a lot of stone to move. There's a lot of cement to mix. There's a lot of work to be done. But if everybody would just start on the section that is closest to them. And so now this big task becomes manageable because everybody gets involved. Everybody pitches in. Think about how simple this strategy is. Just start on the section next to you. And as I read Nehemiah 3 and I had this revelation, I realized, what would happen in Albuquerque, New Mexico, if Harvest adopted this strategy? You see, all of a sudden, this city that's so big, what if our strategy was simply this? Just start where you are. Just start with your neighbors. Just start with your coworkers. Just start where you are. You see, here's the deal. And I'm not afraid, okay, to talk about the enormity of the thing in front of us. I mean, Albuquerque is really big. In fact, let's look at it this way, okay? Albuquerque is 187 square miles, okay? That's the city limits. It's 187 square miles, and it's home to about 500,000 people, okay? And then Harvest is 5 acres and about 300 people when everyone's home, right? When everyone gets together. So for math people, we're outnumbered 1 to 1,666. Okay? There's nothing in that number. That's just what it came to.
We're outnumbered, right? It's a big city, and we're a little bitty church, right?
It's a big, there's a lot of, and we're not even like singling out like all of the issues and all of the things that we've been called to tackle. And so we look at this and it's big, but here's what God's strategy is. Just repair the section nearest to you. What if every family in Harvest and Harvest Espanol and Harvest Rio Rancho, what if every one of us just took this to heart and we said, you know what? We're going to work on the families closest to us. What if each of us simply repaired the part of the city where God had planted us, where you live? Did you know that where you live, like I'm talking specifically, we know what city you're in, but the neighborhood that you're in and the neighbors that you are next to, did you know that that's not an accident? Did you know that you didn't just pick that house? Did you know that that's not just where you showed up? There's a plan for each and every one of us and where God has planted us. And so what if we started where we live? What if we started where we work or where we play or where we eat or where our kids go to school or where we shop? What if we just started on the section of wall that was closest to us? And I know what some of you are thinking. You're saying, there's no way that it could be that easy. But it is. It really is that easy. Is we begin this project of repairing a city by starting on the section that's closest to you. Now, most of you who come here on a regular basis, you'll know the answer to this question. But I want to talk about it for a minute. What are the last five words that we challenge you with every single week when we close our church, when we close our service? What are they? Harvest, go be the church. Harvest, go be the church. You see, I wanted to talk about this for a second because I'm afraid that I don't want to just go through the motion and just, you know, to be honest, I was thinking this week, where did that start? And I literally just said it one week, okay? There was no, like, I just said it, and then it just sounded so good that I just said it the next week, and then now I can't stop saying it, okay? But here's where I really say it, okay? Because you're part of a church, you're sitting in a church that we believe it's not a building, right? The church is not a building. The church is a group of people, right? You and I make up the church. And so this idea of, you know, and I don't want to get into the semantics, but, you know, of let's go to church, right? Like, kids, get in the car. It's time to go to church, right? What you're really saying, you're not going to a physical location. You're not just going to a building. You're saying, let's go gather with the rest of the family that makes up the local church that we are a part of. And so when we end on Sundays and we say, Harvest, go be the church, what we're saying is, go be Christ to the section closest to you. You're not responsible to reach the whole city. You're just responsible to reach the section where God has planted you. And collectively, as each of us do this, as each of us work on the section closest to us, then we make an impact on the bigger picture. Are you following me? So maybe you're here today and you're thinking, well, that's a really good strategy, but certainly he doesn't mean me. And for whatever reason, you've got some reason that you disqualify yourself, right? Well, you know, I'm old, or I'm young, or I'm a man, or I'm a woman, or I don't know the Bible, or, you know, I have six fingers, or, you know, whatever your reason is. So many of us, we disqualify ourselves from the thing that God has called us to do. And so now, here's what I want us to do. We're going to go back through chapter 3, and I just want to show you some very interesting things in chapter 3 as it relates to this strategy that everyone gets involved, and you just work on the section closest to you. Verse 1 starts like this. Eliashib, the high priest, and his fellow priests went to work and rebuilt the sheep gate. They dedicated it and set its doors in place, building as far as the Tower of the Hundred, which they dedicated, and as far as the Tower of Hananel. Now, here's what I want you to see, okay? I like that Nehemiah's description of who built the wall begins by letting us know that the pastors led the way. The very first verse, you see the high priest and the fellow priests, okay, not praying a prayer of dedication over, you know, the wall, right? Not serving communion to the workers, right? But the high priest and the fellow priests, they rolled their sleeves up, they got their trowels, they got their shovels, they got their wheelbarrows, and they went to work. And so here's what I want to say to you this morning. You're part of a church that our team, our pastors, our staff, okay, we're not going to ask you to do something that we're not willing to do ourselves. When we talk about getting involved and loving your city and all the different programs and ways and things and generosity and all, when we talk about this, we're not just saying, hey, you should do this. We're saying, let's do these things. And so I want you to see that the first people to get involved in the rebuilding was the priests. And I'm here to tell you that I'm ready and our team is ready to lead the way in loving Albuquerque. Verse 8 says, I'm going to skip through this just a little bit, so just follow with me. Verse 8 says, Uzziel, son of Hariah, one of the goldsmiths, okay, so what was his profession? He's a goldsmith, repaired the next section. And Hanani, one of the perfume makers, so what was his profession? A perfume maker, made repairs next to that. And they restored Jerusalem as far as the broad wall. And so here's the deal, is I love how God uses people to accomplish his task that are not qualified to accomplish that task. Here's what I know, okay, about a perfume maker and a goldsmith, okay, is they don't know nothing about wall building, right? Am I right? I mean, I just imagine Mr. Perfume Maker, he's probably got really soft hands, right? And he probably smells really good, right? Like everywhere he goes. Like, you know Mr. Perfume Maker's coming because you can smell him coming, right? It's like, oh, here comes Mr. Softy, right? He makes perfume, right? That's what I think. Maybe perfume making is way harder. I don't know. I'm making this up, okay? Mr. Goldsmith, he's not a wall builder, right? So here's what I want you to hear this morning, okay? What you do, your occupation, what you do is what you do. It's not who you are. Okay? This is important. What you do is just simply what you do. That doesn't define who you are. What you do is the talent and the skill and the gifting that God has given you to be able to provide for your family, to be able to be a witness in your community, in that sphere of influence. It's just simply what you do. It does not define who you are. See, I could see Mr. Goldsmith and Mr. Perfume Maker saying, you know, Nehemiah, I can't help in the rebuilding of the wall because that's not what I do. But instead they recognized that their calling was something separate and distinct from what they do, from their job, from their occupation. You see, let's make it practical today, okay? If you are a pilot, then you fly planes, but your calling is still to reach as many people with the gospel of Jesus Christ and to help to build the kingdom and to love your city. But you just get to fly a plane the rest of the time. Are you with me? If you're a dentist, then you get to drill people's teeth out, okay? But your calling is still to bring as many people to Jesus as you can. If you're a barber, then what you do is you cut hair, but that's not who you are. Are you following me? And so what I love about the story in Nehemiah is that everyone began to get involved, and it wasn't about what they did. It was simply about the calling of God on our lives to love our cities. Verse 12 says this, Shalom, son of a guy I'm not going to even try to say, ruler of a half district of Jerusalem, repaired the next section with the help of his daughters. Okay? All the daughters in the house say whoop whoop. That was for you, Ashley. She always whoop whoops. So I have three daughters. And so I'm really glad to read this part of Nehemiah, okay? Because here's what I love about the Bible, okay? Nothing's in there by accident. It's all inspired word of God so that we can learn things, right? And so we're reading along in Nehemiah, and all of a sudden we get to this verse, and we see that in this section, that it's repaired with the help of the daughters. And I love that Nehemiah included that women are involved in the rebuilding of the wall. You see, in today's culture, this really should go without, you know, with, I shouldn't have to stop here to point this out, but there's some thick-headed individuals out there that still believe that women cannot be a part of ministry, that women cannot be a part of repairing the city, that there's still some thick-headed men out there who think that the only place that women can get involved in the church is in the cooking for the potlucks and the cleanup afterwards. Words, okay? Boo is right. Right? We booed Sanballat and Tobiah, and today we're going to boo thick-headed men, right? Okay? I love that Nehemiah points this out, and let me just, if you can't tell, let me just go on record as saying that we don't believe that. We believe that men and women and young and old and every nationality, oh, it's that whole, what do we say? Everyone what? Matters, right? Well, listen, if you matter, okay, then you should have a part in this, okay? You shouldn't just be relegated to the kitchen, right? See, these ladies, okay, let me tell you how, okay, let me just tell you, they weren't cooking the meals for the men who were repairing the wall. Did you notice that? Right? They weren't just cleaning up after the men who, they were helping to repair the wall. And I love that Nehemiah points this out because women can be used in ministry as well. God's work is not reserved for men. In fact, I'll just even go a step further and say that I believe that many of our churches today would be dead if it weren't for the godly women who stepped up to lead while men were being thick-headed. So thank you. Did I say that? Okay, I just said that. Verse 14. The dung gate was repaired. The dung gate? I didn't make this up. The dung gate was repaired by Malchijah, son of Rechab. I'm butchering this. Ruler of the district of Beth Hakiram, and he rebuilt it and put its doors with their bolts and bars in place. Now, here's what I want you to see is this guy, it tells us he is a ruler of a district, okay? So this shows us that high-level leaders got involved. Leaders, in fact, if you read through it, you'll see leaders of districts and of half-districts, okay? And here's the deal. It wasn't just leaders barking out the orders, right? Like picture, you know, the highway road crew, right? It wasn't just, you know, like one guy barking orders while 20 other minions, you know, do the work, right? When it was time to build the wall, even the leaders of the districts and the half-districts got involved. They rolled their sleeves up, they got their tools, and they went to work. I'm just trying to show you as we go through chapter 3 that every single person, everyone got involved in the repairing of the walls. Verse 20 says this, next to him, Baruch, son of Zabai, zealously repaired another section from the angle to the entrance of the house of Eliashib, the high priest. And I love this detail because it says that Baruch zealously repaired another section. That word zealous means this. It means full of enthusiasm, full of intensity, full of passion. You see, there were some people who were excited to be part of the rebuilding of the wall. Can I ask you a question? Does rebuilding a wall sound fun to you? It really doesn't to most of us. To one person over here, it does. And you can come dig a footing for me later, okay? It doesn't sound like fun work, right? And I can just imagine, you know, this guy, he was the guy that was whistling while he worked, right? He was the guy that on his way, I mean, he's like, hi-ho, hi-ho, it's off to build a wall we go, right? And some of the other people around him are like, will you shut up, okay? We're like 40 days in, my hands hurt, my back hurts, right? And this guy, I love this detail. I love that he zealously repaired the wall. You see, did any of you enjoy being around party poopers, complainers, right? People who are just discouraging, right? People who rain on your parade. The glass is always half empty, right? I call them Eeyores, right? I mean, does anybody enjoy being around an Eeyore, right? It's just no fun, right? I mean, everything's going good. These are the type of people that, I mean, you're having a great day, right? Everything's going good. And you come across them, and they just rain on your parade. And it's just, you leave just going, well, this day stinks, right? I mean, it just changes the trajectory of your day, right? And so I just decided a long time ago that I don't want to spend my time around that kind of a person. I would rather be around people who are positive and encouraging and believing and faith-filled, glass half full, happy people. You're not happy. And here's why I paused here, okay? There's a lot of Christians out there who recognize the call of God on their life, but they go about it with a scowl on their face all day. In fact, there's some who have twisted this theology to believe that if you're not suffering for Christ, then you're not really doing what he's called you to do. I just think that's silly, okay? And they don't like that word silly either, but it's okay. That's why I used it. And I believe that the thing that God's called us to be a part of, the rebuilding of the city, you know what? If you're not enjoying the part of the rebuilding that you're a part of, then go find another part to be a part of. We should be doing this with a smile on our face, with a hop in our step, with a little whistle while we work. With some zeal, with some passion, with some enthusiasm. See, I talked to my staff this week. I'll just share this lesson with you quickly. I talked to my staff this week about a three-letter word that I don't want to be said around our meeting table when we're dreaming about our church. See, we spend time every week, we sit down as a team and we dream and we plan and we pray and we try to figure out where God's taking us next. And so I just talked to the team. I said, guys, here's a word that I don't want us to say because this word is a dream crusher. And it's this word, how. Have you ever shared your dream with someone? I mean, you're excited, right? God has stirred your heart and you're all excited. You go to someone and you're saying, oh, just listen. Let me tell you what God's called me to do. Let me tell you what I am supposed to go and plant a church. And they look at you and they go, how? How are you going to do that? How are you going to pay for that? How are you going to attract people? How? You don't even know how to preach, right? Isn't it funny when you share your dream how instantly people have opinions about all the things that you cannot do, right? And so this is what we talked about in our meeting this week. We said, look, this is a word that we're just going to outlaw, okay? Now, there's a time to figure out the details, okay? Those are called planning meetings, okay? When we say, it's time, let's get the paper out, let's get the pens out, let's get the calculators out, let's figure the plan, okay? But when we're dreaming, I'm like, how is just a crusher, am I right? And so can I make the same rule for us? I can like enforce this on my team. I can't really enforce this on you. But when I'm talking about being zealous and passionate, you know, here's what I love. Here's what's so fun for me. One of the funnest things ever is we start talking about loving our city and I start getting emails from people and I start getting Facebook messages and I start getting phone calls and I start getting people going, Pastor, what if we did this? Pastor, what if we did this? Pastor, I have this idea that we should do that. And can you imagine what would happen if every time I got one of those, if my answer was just this, well, how are we going to do that? Right? Can I just tell you something? And I say this quite often because it's the truth. Everything that we've done in the last 2 years, we shouldn't have been able to do any of it. Everything that God's ever called us to do, we've just said yes, and then we've figured out how to get there. Let me say it to you this way. You will always know the what before you know the how. That's normal. You will know what God has called you to do. God's called me to go be a missionary. God's called me to help kids. God's called me to... You'll know the what, and the how you won't know, okay? And the what will always come before the how, and that's normal. That's part of the process. And so part of this, you know, part of this is we've been talking about, you know, what does this mean for us, right? We talked last week about Sanballat and Tobiah and how they were the how guys, right? You missed a great chance to boo. They were the how guys, right? How are you going to do this? You know, well, are you going against the king? How are you going to get all the wood? How are you going to get all the brick? They were the discouragers, right? And this is what we talked about. When we begin to fulfill the call of God in our lives, the bullets are going to fly, the accusations and the questions and the discouragement. It's going to happen. So what we said as a family is, okay, it's going to come, but it needs to come from outside of the walls and not from within the walls. And that's why I'm talking to you about this little three-letter word, how? Because we're not going to be dream crushers, right? We're on the same team. We're serving the same God. We're trying to accomplish the same vision. And so, church, we need some zealous, happy, believing people who are ready to go to work loving our city. Woo! Mitch is happy. Can I get the worship team to join me this morning? All right, so now let me talk straight to you for a minute, okay? That's chapter 3, okay? That's what God's teaching us today out of chapter 3. Maybe he taught you some other things this week as you read it, okay? But here's where I want to talk to you for just a second, okay? Repairing the section nearest to you begins with repairing your own family. Everything else, good stuff, but here's where it boils down, okay? Before you can go to work repairing the section nearest to you, it begins at home. You know, I'm thankful for a mom and a dad who understood this principle, that while they were awesome pastors and awesome leaders in our community and awesome just people, they were also an awesome mom and dad. They understood that ministry begins in the home. And so here's where we're going to end today. Here's where we're going to pray. Is I really strongly felt led to pray over our families. Now, it's a little unfair because as your pastor, I have inside information on a lot of things that's going on. And so listen to me. If you happen to be one of those and you're like, well, you know what's going on in my family. Duh, you know. Let me just say this. We're not ending this way for anybody in particular, okay? We're ending it for all of us in this way. Our families are under attack. Our marriages are under attack. Our children are under attack. Our families, I mean, I'm talking Harvest. Like, I'm not even talking, you know, I'm not, like, we're bringing it in, right? Our families are under attack. And I know what God's called us to do. I know what he's called us to do here in our city, but we can't do anything in our city until we start in our own home. And I'll just say this. I'll get off my soapbox for a minute. I've been convicted personally this week. I was listening to a message about, I don't know what it's called. It was about family. And I was convicted. This pastor talked about how as his kids were growing up, he had 6 kids. He said, while they were growing up, I made it a habit that I would spend 15 minutes a day individually with each of my kids. And I'm running, and I'm listening to this, and I'm like, 15, 30, 40, like, that's a lot of time. That's my first thought. And I have half of that, right? And I was convicted. I was convicted about, you know, how I'm doing as a father and how I'm doing as a husband. I was convicted. You know, we try to, you know, we'll talk, we'll have great plans. You know, let's have a family night. You know, we're going to play games and we're going to do things together. You know, and you know what I was convicted about on that is that even when we do that, I'm still pastor because I'm afraid to shut my phone off because, well, what if a crisis happens in the middle of that time? And I was convicted. And so if you call me this week and I don't answer, it's because I'm with my family, okay? And when I get done, then I'll call you back. And if you can't handle that, you can go find another pastor who's killing his family for you, okay? And so we're going to pray for families today, okay? Because here's what I know. Every single family, you either have come through a crisis, you're in the middle of a crisis, or you're going to be in a crisis. That's what I know. That's just the nature of relationships, right? And it's the nature of a fallen world, and it's the nature of having an enemy called Satan who's out to get you. And so I just want to spend some time this morning praying for our families, praying for whatever. That's really broad. I'm going to, on purpose, keep it really broad, okay? And so here's what we're going to do. I'm going to ask the worship team, can y'all do a song? I didn't prep them. I never prep them for this stuff. I'm going to ask them to just start singing a song. And if you're here today, maybe you're here by yourself. And maybe you're like, you know, that's part of it. I'm here by myself. Okay, don't be afraid, even if you're here by yourself. You can stand in the gap for your family this morning. But if you're here today and you would just say, you know what, Pastor, my family needs some prayer today. Whatever that is. I mean, this is like super broad, okay? Like if you walk, let me say, if you walk down here with your wife, here's what we're not going to do, is we're not going to look at you and go, oh man, those guys are having major marriage problems. They're probably about to get divorced, right? That's not what we're thinking, okay? Here's what we're thinking. I am so proud of a man and a woman who will fight for their family, okay? Maybe you're here today. Maybe you need to go grab your teenager by the ear and drag him up here, right? Okay, I don't know. Maybe you drag your husband up here by the ear, right? I've been there too, okay? So as they began to sing this, here's what I'm going to do. In fact, would you stand with me? I think it's easier to worship while we're standing, and I think it's easier for you now to take the next step, okay? Because now you're up off of your donkey, okay? If you were here last week. So here's what we're going to do. As we begin to worship, if you would just say, Pastor, my family needs prayer this morning. Would you just come to this front area and just come. And we're going to sing one time through and then we're going to start praying for families, okay? We're going to pray for a couple of things this morning. I'm just trying to sense where the Spirit of God is moving us today. I feel the Lord leading me to this scripture. Ezekiel 22 verse 30 says this. It says, I looked for a man among them who would build up the wall and stand before me in the gap on behalf of the land so I would not have to destroy it, but I found none. And this is not encouraging, but I'll get to the part where I encourage you. Verse 31 says, so he says, I looked for someone, I found none. Verse 31, so I'll pour out my wrath on them and consume them with fiery anger, bringing down on their heads all they have done, declares the sovereign Lord. Okay, so that part's not encouraging, okay? But here's what is, okay? Right now, God's looking for men and women who will stand in the gap for the rebuilding of their family, for the rebuilding of their marriage, for the rebuilding of their family unit, their extended family, their children, whatever that happens to be, okay? And here's what's encouraging, okay? Is right now, as the Spirit of God is looking for someone who will stand in the gap, guess what he sees? He's looking here and he's seeing an awesome group of men and women who are saying, you know what? I will stand in the gap for my family. God, I'll do it. I'm not giving up. I'm not giving in. I'm not backing down. I know what you've called us to. I know what you've declared over us. And you know what? I also know what the enemy's done, but I'm just declaring today that the enemy is not going to have the final say in my family. I'm going to stand in the gap today. And so that's what's happening, okay? So you may be here by yourself, you may be here, but you're missing one or two people from your family, but here's what's happening, okay? Do not be discouraged today. This is what the Spirit of God is saying for over you today. Do not be discouraged today. He sees you standing in the gap, and He will fight for you. Do you receive that? So let's pray. Father, I pray right now, God, I pray, Lord, for every man, woman, boy, and girl who has come today and is standing in the gap for their family. God, we are declaring today that the enemy is not going to have the final say in the future of our family. Lord, the enemy's not going to have final say in our marriages, in our children, in our future. He's not going to have the final word. And so, Lord, I'm praying today, God, I'm praying right now, God, for the restoration, Lord, for the redemption, God, that we are seeking over our families. God, I just declare today, God, that no matter how broken and busted up and how horrible the situation is, God, I declare today, God, that there is no situation that is too big or too messy or too broken that you cannot redeem it, that you cannot repair it. God, as we've been in a journey of trying to figure out how to love our city, we just pause here in week three to recognize, Lord, to recognize that we cannot be involved in repairing the city until we've done the work at home. I feel led to pray over our men that have come here this morning. I pray, God, over the men. Lord, I pray, God, that you would cause our men, Lord, to rise to the challenge that is before them. Lord, going to work on rebuilding a wall, God, it requires us to gather our tools and to go to work. And so, God, I pray over our men. I pray over the tools that you've put in their hands, the spiritual tools to lead their family, Lord, to go to war for their children, to protect their children, to cover their spouse. Lord, I pray, God, that our men would rise to the challenge today and would gather up the tools that you've put in their hands and would go to work. God, I pray for the ladies who are here today. God, I pray for the ladies that are here today that are standing in the gap. Some of them are standing in the gap because their husbands have not done this. They've not been under that covering. And because of that, certain things have happened. But God, I just thank you, God, that today what you're saying over us is that while the husband may not have been covering them, that you have been covering them their entire lives, their entire marriage. God, I thank you, God, for the covering that you provide. And Lord, we just declare today, God, over every family. God, I pray right now, God, for lost children and broken relationships with children, for them to return. God, we call them to come home today, God. We call, God, to those lost family members and those broken relationships, God, those relationships that have been severed. God, in fact, I pray, God, over relationships that have been severed so severely, Lord, that everything about it would seem to say that it will never get better. Everything about it would seem to say that that relationship will never be repaired. But God, today we prophetically announce over our families that that will not be the case, that our families will be restored, that husbands will come home, that wives will return, that children will come back. God, we call them back, God. We believe, God, at Harvest, that everything is spiritual before it's natural. And so we're doing the work right now. We're doing the work today, God. We're calling on you and we're asking you, God, to restore and to repair. Here's what I believe is happening right now. Those of you that are up here, repairing a wall is, there's a lot of work in that. It requires us to action, to do something. I'm gonna give you just a moment of just time here, just quiet with the Spirit of God just kind of hovering over us. And I believe that for several of you that God's going to speak to you the very specific next step that he wants you to take to begin that process of the repairing of the wall. See, we can come here and we can pray and we can cry and we can prophesy and we can do all that spiritual stuff, but at the end of the day, you're going to have to walk out of here at the end of the service and you're going to have to go to work. You're going to have to get what I mean. You're going to have to go to work for your family. You're going to have to dig in. You're going to have to, you know, like Gerald and I, we had to get up every morning and water that silly trench and get our shovels out and get the picks out. And you're going to have to go to work. And here's what it is. God's going to speak to you. I'm going to ask him to speak to you very clearly because it's going to be different for a lot of you, but he's going to speak to you about that very clear next step to go to work. So Father, we open our hearts to you right now. God, we've been warring for the last few minutes over our families. We've been praying and prophesying and declaring. But God, I pray right now that as our hearts are open to you, that God, you would reveal to us that very specific next step of how we are to go to work. What do we do this afternoon? What do we do tomorrow morning? What are the things that you're asking us to do? And God, I pray that as we open our hearts, that just in just a moment, God, that you would just speak to us and show us that next step. Thank you, Lord. God, we thank you, God, for victory this morning. In fact, let's end like this. That was kind of a quiet, somber moment, but let's end. We talked a lot about being zealous, right? About being happy, about being, we're not going to be Eeyores, right? Like, nobody should walk out of here today and be like, I don't know about my family, you know, my wife and my kids, right? Can we sing a worship song together? Can we end this way? And let's get some zeal. Let's get some hop in our step. Can we do that? All right, so let's do that. And then you'll know it's time to go because I'll tell you to go be the church, okay? All right. I feel bad for these guys. They never know what I'm going to do. All right, let's do a song. You can go back to your seats if you want, or you can stay here if you want. Come on. I'm free to worship. Yes. Yeah, come on. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, come on. God, we declare our freedom today, Lord. Now that's a good way to end a service, am I right? Woo! No Eeyores, all right? We just crushed the spirit of Eeyore, okay? All right, so as you're going today, may the Lord bless you and keep you and cause his face to shine upon you now and forever. And why don't you join me in this since we talked about it, okay? Harvest, go be the church.